The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Zion Primitive Baptist Church in Zion, Alabama. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.
I want to welcome you today to the Zion Primitive Baptist Church podcast. This podcast is an outreach of Zion Primitive Baptist Church, which is located in the Zion community near Gordo, Alabama. I'm Elder Chris McCool, and I serve as pastor of Zion Primitive Baptist Church. We are a congregation of believers in the sovereign grace of God, where families worship together through the simple practice of preaching, praying, and singing. If you live in this area or are visiting here, we would love to have you attend worship services with us. We meet every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. and the first and third Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. I'm happy to note that our daily podcast is featured on Grace Alone Radio, which you can find at gracealoneradio.net. You can find the schedule on the website, and you can also download an app to your phone so that you can listen wherever you are. Grace Alone Radio is a 24-hour streaming service which carries the message of God's sovereign grace around the clock and around the world. Zion Primitive Baptist Church is located at 9487 County Road 49, Gordo, Alabama. That's near the intersection of County Road 49 and Alabama Highway 159, about 8 miles north of Gordo, Alabama, and about 10 miles northeast of Reform, Alabama. If you're interested in finding more sermons, you can go to our website at zionpbc.com. That's zionpbc.com, where you'll find all of our posted sermons, as well as a link to subscribe to our podcast. You can also subscribe to our website, which will update you every time a new sermon is posted. Do you get tired of the daily bombardment of sin and immorality? Does politics get you down and out? Does living in a sin-cursed world just generally drag you down into the depths of despair? And maybe you need to see what Isaiah saw. In a time of great political and national turmoil, Isaiah saw the Lord high and lifted up. This was the vision he needed in order to find encouragement. Join us today as we begin to look at the need to see God seated upon his throne, high and lifted up.
I would see Jesus when the powers of joy adorn my way.
ask that you turn with me to Isaiah chapter 6. I would beg you to please continue to pray for me this morning. I feel pretty weak, feeble, and distracted of my mind. This morning, as I was trying to meditate, you know, I don't know what you imagine a preacher's life is like, okay? I don't know if you imagine that Sunday mornings you can just hear angels singing as we're meditating and praying. This morning I'm praying, and Lord, just, you know, fill me with your spirit. You know, these sheep, you know, feed them, Lord. And, you know, while I'm going through that, you know, Cal's screaming and he's throwing stuff in the fish tank again, and then he's come into our room, and while I'm there, I mean, I eventually had to just lock the door so that I could pray. And he comes in there, and he starts trying to climb on the bed, and he grabs Sister Meredith's engagement ring that is on the nightstand there, and which I didn't know what was going to happen with that thing, so it was like I had to shut that party down. It was a dance party on the bed. I had to shut it down, you know. And he's going to be upset if he ever hears this recording someday. And then, you know, for Sister Maggie, you know, I had to leave the house last night about 3 a.m., go outside and root around in the car to see if we could find the passy, you know, because it was a crisis, you know what I mean? So anyway, all is well. I think I ate breakfast for myself. I think I did. I can't remember. Everybody else got breakfast, though, so that's good. All right, so Isaiah chapter 6. Now, what I want us to hone in on this morning is something that I particularly need to hear, okay? And you can very easily get distracted and discouraged by what's going on in the world. You know, you really kind of have to be living under a rock to not at least have the news of the campaign, of the presidential campaign, if it's not getting to you somehow, okay? And then you'll all the time be seeing, well, you know, Trump did this, or Harris did this, or something, and it's all the time something, right? And I don't know about you, okay, but I'm tired. I have election fatigue, okay? I am just about plumb give out with it, right? And I know you could probably all relate to it. And you sit there, and as a disciple of God, you're trying to think about the implications for God's people in the election. And you worry. You know, you worry about what's going to happen. You know, neither one of them, you know, we would consider for pastor of the church, right? Isn't that right? Neither one of them we would consider as probably good members of the church, right? But you sit there and you think about policies and who would be better as far as a Bible-based mindset. And neither one of them really fit the bill perfectly on that either, you know. One more than the other, you know. I think you know what I'm talking about. But still, at the end of the day, you think, well, if we lose this election, then it's over. You know, it's despair. Maybe yesterday in watching the ball games, you had a similar experience where you felt like, well, if we lose this game, our season's over, right? Okay. And you know, if you're an Auburn fan like myself, you know, it's a tough day. You know, you watch it, you get discouraged, and you're like, whatever. You know, you go through the cycle of hope and despair all over again. We're going to have a good season this year. Not really, right? It happens again. And then if you're an Alabama fan, you know, it's not much better. I mean, you won the game, but you're still embarrassed, you know? So, I mean, if you put your hope in the things of this world, you're always going to be disappointed. You know what happens if your team doesn't win Saturday, or if your team doesn't win Friday, or if the election doesn't go the way you want it to in November? God still reigns, right? It we continue on just like we have continued on ever since the beginning, right? You know, it would not be the first time that God's children have had to endure hardship. no matter how it goes, no matter how the election goes, no matter how things in your life go, you still need the Lord, and He's still reigning. So, in Isaiah 6, in verse 1, it says, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and His train filled the temple." Now, is this the view of God that you have? You know, I gotta confess that I have in my own mind, okay, belittled God, because I fear things. I fear what's going to happen in the election, what's going to happen to our economy, what's going to happen to social policy and the social war that's happening, right, of morality. What's going to happen? And I'm afraid. But you know what? You know what's happening when I think, oh, well, if we lose the election, then it's just going to be awful. And it may be. But you know what I'm doing when I do that? I am not seeing God high and lifted up and His train filling the temple. You know, God has always been. He has lived through every single human nation. He has still been king every time. He has always been. And a little darkness is nothing to Him, okay? So I want to encourage us to look up again and to see that God, that He sits on a throne, high and lifted up, and His train fills the temple. Now let's go to Psalm 103. Psalm 103 and verse 19. It says, "The Lord hath prepared His throne in the heavens, and His kingdom ruleth over all." So His throne is not one of these thrones that's just here on the earth, right? His throne is in the heavens, and it ruleth over all. All right, so His throne sits over Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, whatever you want to call it. Whatever your skin color is, wherever you live, whatever nation you're a part of, God is above all of it. And so when we, even a national strife, even something as vast and as big as a national election, when you've got as much at stake as there is now, you know, that's a little thing before a big God, right? And so I want to encourage us this morning that God still reigns, okay? This morning, Auburn is 1-1, okay? And they shouldn't have lost that game, but guess what? God still reigns, okay? If the election doesn't go the way you want it to, you know what's going to happen that next morning and you wake up? God still reigns, okay? And what's going to happen for that 4 years that the person that you didn't want to have elected is in office? God still reigns, okay? Can you imagine what it was like in the first century to be a Christian? I know that religious liberties have been under attack. They always will be under attack, okay? But can you imagine what it was like to be a first century Christian where you had to literally worship God in private, in secret? And there was people like Paul actively looking for you to find you out and to haul you off and to kill you. Now, you know, I would think that they were thinking, man, this is tough. But yet, guess what? God was still on His throne even then, in the midst of that kind of darkness. And the darkness we've got going on now is bad. You know, but the Lord has protected us, okay? The Lord has blessed America, I think largely definitely because of His people in America, okay? Now, we have instruction that we as His people call on His name. And He says, "If My people which are called by My name will call upon Me, I will hear and I will heal their land." You realize that, as Jesus also taught, that we are salt and light. We are sources of light in the midst of this darkness, and we are sources of preservation in this world. There's a darkness that is decaying this world, but guess what? You are an agent of preservation. You are literally allowing this nation to not decay as fast as it should, okay? And think about that. Let's go to Isaiah 66. This is an image I like to see. Isaiah 66 and verse 1 says, "Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne, and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye build unto me, and where is the place of my rest?" This idea of a God who was so vast that the earth and all of the problems that we've got here, and all of the torment and all of the angst that we've got about elections and about wars and about all of that, all of this is contained in this place that he considers as a footstool. Okay? When you're sitting there in your living room and you want to prop your feet up, right? You put your feet on an ottoman, or maybe you've got a reclining chair or something. You put your foot up on something. He says that's what he views this world as, right? It's a small thing. It's an insignificant thing, yet it's significant to him, okay? So, do you think that the problems that you face, the when things don't go your way, do you think that God is in any way limited by that? Do you think that God is in any way defeated? You know, all of a sudden, the election doesn't go the way you want it to go. You don't get that job that you wanted. You don't get that raise you wanted. Any number of things. Is God in some? Is he defeated? Right. You don't get the test results that you want from that scan. You've got a window busted out. You've got a scratch on your car. Anything happens. You know how it is, how life is, right? All of a sudden, your toilets don't work, or your water's out, or your electricity's out. There's all kind of things just waiting to just throw you a curveball. Is God any less God when you're dealing with that? No, he's not. He is still God, and he is still on his throne. Now, I want us to spend some time here in Daniel. Daniel chapter 2. We're going to look at something interesting here. So what's happening here in the book of Daniel? Of course, this is in the Babylonian captivity, where the great empire of Babylon has come, and they've taken over Israel. They've taken over at least a portion, and they've taken Jewish men into Babylon. And they've done this to other nations as well. And so King Nebuchadnezzar here has a dream. And it's a dream that just troubles him. He wakes up, he's sweating, he's disturbed. And I'm sure you've had dreams like that, you know. You wake up and you're just your sheets are just soaked, and maybe you're breathing hard. You know, maybe you wake up and you say, thank you, Lord, that was a dream. I've had many experiences like that before, where I'm dreaming that I show up at the university, I show up at the law school, and all of my classmates look at me and they say, "Did you not come to class all semester? We got our exam today." And I start sweating, and I'm like, I forgot that I had this class. I never went to it once, and we got the exam today. That's a dream I have on at least quarterly, okay? And then also a very similar dream is I find myself on the sidelines at Pickens Academy, and the coach is looking around and says, "Where's John Morgan? Where is he? I'm about to put him in." And I'm thinking, I don't even have pads that fit. And so I start trying to get pads on. And then I'm trying to explain to them, "Hey, look, I'm not really in shape, okay? You know, I haven't been conditioning with the team. And also, I don't know the plays. But send me in, coach, fine, whatever." Those are dreams that I have on a regular basis. I don't know if that says anything about past trauma, okay? But, you know, those are my dreams. Nebuchadnezzar has this dream. Of course, this is a special dream because this was a dream that God gave him, okay? And he wakes up and he's disturbed. And so what does he do? He calls for his wise men, his magicians, all the folks that he'd gathered around his court. And he says, I want you to interpret this dream. And they say, okay, tell us the dream and we'll give you the interpretation. And he says, no. I can't remember the dream, okay? And I know you can relate to that. You have dreams and then, you know, maybe for the first few seconds of waking up, you remember it. And then, you know, by breakfast time, you really don't remember it. He says, I'm not going to tell you the dream. I don't remember it. You've got to tell me what the dream is and the interpretation or I'm going to kill you. Now imagine, you know, I mean, you may think your job's hard, but I mean, that's a pretty bad job, right? When somebody brings you in and says, all right, your job today is to tell me what I dreamed last night and to tell me what it means or you're fired and I kill you, right? And so that's what happened with Nebuchadnezzar. He brings those men in. And they said, well, you've asked for a really hard thing because we don't know what you dreamed. And so Nebuchadnezzar sends the order out to kill him. And meanwhile, Daniel's is sitting around somewhere. He hadn't heard this, but the news of this gets to him. He hears that we're all about to be killed because Nebuchadnezzar had a dream that nobody can tell what it was. And so Daniel says, okay, he goes to his friends. Now, this is a good lesson, okay? He goes to his companions, and he says, let's pray. He said, I want y'all, let's all pray together that God will give us wisdom and will show us this thing. So Daniel doesn't just go into Nebuchadnezzar and say, I know what your dream is, I know what the interpretation is. He sought the Lord, okay? When you've got things where you need wisdom and discretion and discernment in life, you need to be praying. And look, get your friends to pray with you, okay? You know, I would love, I've got, you know, y'all know I've got a lot of things going on, right? I've got a lot of irons in the fire that I'm trying to keep from burning up, you know? But you can always call me or text me and say, hey, I've got some decisions, I've got some things, you know, will you pray with me? You know, and I would love to spend my day praying for you, okay? That's what Daniel did. He went to his friends and he said, we need to pray. And they did. And the Lord answered. All right, so here in verse 27, here's Daniel in front of Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets. You see, even in the captivity, even when God's people were captive, God was still on his throne in heaven, right? Now, we know that that doesn't mean that God is causing everything that happens to happen, all the bad things. He's not just throwing you curveballs, okay? We know that all things are underneath his power. All things are subject to his power. But that doesn't mean that he causes everything to happen. That's another message. We could talk about that. But in the captivity, God is on his throne. And Daniel says, but there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. All right, so Daniel's about to tell this dream and he's about to give an interpretation of it, the interpretation of it. I want us to notice this. This is of future things. God is giving him a prophecy to Nebuchadnezzar of what is to come. And I think we'll be able to see exactly what he was referring to. But remember, these are big things. These are things that affect the entire world. He says, verse 30, "But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible." He said, what you saw was this great thing, and it was a terrible image, not in the sense that we think of the word terrible, as in it's awful, it's terrible. It was something that's so big that it has a sense of terror to it, right? A sense of awe. He says, "This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay." So it's this great statue, essentially, of a person, of a man. Huge, and it's made of a bunch of different materials. Layered materials, the head, the chest and arms, and then you had the stomach, and then you had the legs, and then you had the feet. In verse 34, "Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, and no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king."
Due to the constraints of time, we will stop the message here. But please join us tomorrow for the conclusion of this message. If you would like to subscribe to our website, please go to www.zionpbc.com and sign up for email updates. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact the church at zionpbc1847@gmail.com. That's zionpbc1847@gmail.com. Or you can email me directly at jchrismccool@gmail.com. That's the letter J, chrismccool@gmail.com. Again, thank you for listening. May the Lord bless you is my prayer.
We thank you for listening to today's message. For more information, please visit us online at zionpbc.com.